This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Healthcare gets a vote. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Thursday, May 4. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
House Republicans have scheduled a vote for today on a measure that would replace most of Obamacare. A late amendment appeared to shore up last-minute support.
FBI Director James Comey testifies that he'd make the same decision again about approaching Congress regarding the Hillary email investigation.
Late-night TV host Stephen Colbert says he has no regrets about remarks he made about President Trump. Hear how he responded to critics last night.
And the easiest way you can tick off your colleagues at work, talk politics.
About half of Americans say they've discussed politics at work, and this is since the election. So obviously we knew this was happening before the election. This is since the election. 54% are saying they're doing it. 31% have seen people fight over politics in the office, and 15% admit that they've done that themselves.
Katie Hill at moneyish.com on the surefire way to annoy everyone at work. She's here in about 20 minutes. The House is scheduled to vote for today on a bill to replace most of the Affordable Care Act. The decision to hold a vote suggests Republican leaders expect they finally have secured the 216 GOP votes needed for it to pass, or are willing to gamble that they're close enough that the pressure of a vote will carry them across the finish line of at least one chamber. They appeared to collect enough support when Michigan Congressman Fred Upton yesterday introduced a new proposal that would add $8 billion to help cover costs for people with pre-existing conditions. White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
We continue to move closer and closer to that time, and the number of members who are supporting it continues to grow further and further, and I think that's a very promising sign.
More broadly, the measure would dismantle much of the Obamacare taxes and subsidies and replace them with tax credits, largely tied to age, to help people buy insurance if they don't get it through employers. The bill would also reduce funding for Medicaid. Passage in the House does not guarantee passage in the Senate. FBI Director James Comey is standing behind his decision to alert Congress about a renewed investigation involving Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton shortly before Election Day. Some Democrats, including Mrs. Clinton, felt that decision swayed voters. He sent a letter to Congress in late October, you'll recall, about new potential evidence in the probe into her use of a private email server while she was Secretary of State. Yesterday, he testified that staying silent would have been a, quote, disastrous, catastrophic concealment.
One of my junior lawyers said, should you consider that what you're about to do may help elect Donald Trump president? And I said, thank you for raising that, not for a moment, because down that path lies the death of the FBI as an independent institution in America.
In the end, the evidence didn't change the FBI's previous conclusion that no charges should be brought against her. While Democrats weren't happy with his explanation to come forward about the new emails, Republicans claim the Obama Justice Department offered Mrs. Clinton political cover and that its decision not to prosecute her was misguided. Talk show host Stephen Colbert remains under fire for a vulgar joke he made about President Trump that many critics are calling homophobic. That said, Mr. Colbert, host of The Late Show, appears to be doubling down. A transcript released by CBS says he would do it again, but change a few words that were, quote, cruder than they needed to be. Monday's opening monologue criticized Mr. Trump for abruptly ending an interview with CBS News' Face the Nation host John Dickerson. Mr. Colbert addressed the controversy during last night's show.
If you saw my monologue on Monday, you know that I was a little upset with Donald Trump for insulting a friend of mine. So at the end of that monologue, I had a few choice insults for the president in return. I don't regret that.
He said, among other things, quote, sir, you attract more skinheads than free Rogaine. And, quote, you talk like a sign language gorilla that got hit in the head. What people were most offended by, though, can't even be repeated here. Viewers took issue with that one final joke, with some calling for Mr. Colbert to be fired. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into a Thursday. When President Trump tweeted Tuesday morning urging to shut down the government this fall rather than work with Democrats on the next budget bill, his Republican allies on Capitol Hill were once again caught off guard. Mr. Trump's tweet was just the latest in a flurry of sometimes surprising messages coming from the president and surprising interviews, too. It's a story from Wall Street Journal White House reporter Eli Stokols. Eli, what have you seen?
This is something we saw during the campaign, this sort of flood-the-zone approach from Donald Trump when it comes to creating news. We know he's a huge consumer of the news, that he spends a lot of time in the White House dining room watching television, reading stories about himself, and that staffers have gotten used to or into this pattern of curating the news that comes across his desk, knowing certain things are going to upset him. So they know that he reacts to the news, and now we understand they often, you know, inform him of policy choices by telling him what the likely news coverage will be if you do this or that. So this is a media figure, always has been and still is in the White House. And in that context, we still saw something sort of unusual over the last 2 weeks or so leading up to and really through the 100-day mark. And that was this president was really conducting even more interviews and engaging with the press more than he had at this point, at any point prior in, since taking office. He's done over 40 interviews in the first 100 days,
wow.
But he's done a dozen that we know of in just the past 10 days leading up to Tuesday. Normally, you jump through a million hoops to get a, you know, sit down in the Oval Office. The Wall Street Journal had two of them with President Obama over 8 years. And here in the first 100 days, the Wall Street Journal has already had two interviews in the Oval Office with President Trump. So obviously it's a different pace, but, you know, this was... we're told, you know, we started looking into this, and people close to the president said, well, it's true, and it went even a little further than we anticipated in terms of the volume of interviews and the sort of revolving door of reporters going in and out of the Oval Office. But they said, look, this is a president who has come to the conclusion that he is still his own best spokesperson who wants to be engaging with the media.
It's amazing. And, you know, you made me think as you were saying that how easy it's been to say in my industry to use a President Trump soundbite rather than a White House spokesman like Sean Spicer. This it almost seems like there's no such thing as an exclusive interview with him anymore. Everybody's getting him.
It sure does water down that exclusivity. That's true. And, you know, this is, I mean, we're just in such unfamiliar territory with this kind of a president that, you know, you can sort of throw all the things out the window. I mean, you want to say that the White House doesn't really exist as an entity because no one speaks for the president, and the president himself doesn't often, you know, he speaks all the time, but not always with consistency. So when people say the White House wants this, it's sort of ridiculous to say that because there are people in that White House who are pushing this message or that message, but you know the president is going to determine at the end of the day what's actually happening, and it makes it very hard for reporters, for members of Congress, to trust the messages that are coming out of the quote White House when you know there's a pattern of the president himself sort of contradicting his own spokespeople or his own top aides, and you know that just makes this very chaotic and hard for people to really feel like they're standing on firm ground on anything because the ground is always shifting.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal White House reporter Eli Stokols. He's written a piece called Trump's Spontaneous Comments Catches Allies Off Guard. So what about this pacing? Is anybody in his ear that you know of saying you have to slow this down? Please don't do this without, you know, notifying the communication staff. Like, how does that work?
I just don't think that the communication staff, whether it's Sean Spicer, the press secretary, or his assistant communications director, you know, Mike Dubke, I don't think they have the juice to go into the Oval Office and tell the president to cut it out. Okay. I don't think they would dare. I think that if there's one person in the White House who can kind of gently deliver negative feedback, it's Ivanka Trump, and I don't know that she really cares. There's a lot of belief in this president's ability to drive a message, and even if it's messy, and even if it's not all that helpful, you know, all the time, if they step on themselves, if they frustrate some allies, you know, that's part of this. But people are just going to have to get used to that, they think, because this is the way Trump operates.
Thanks, Eli. Wall Street Journal White House reporter Eli Stokols. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon House, Republicans are once again fast-tracking a repeal and replace bill aimed at the Affordable Care Act, but it appears they don't really know the full impact of the legislation they'll vote on sometime today. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office is not expected to have completed its analysis detailing the effects of the latest changes to the bill in time for the vote. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's already sure the bill will hurt the middle class.
This is about health care being a right, not a privilege, just for the wealthy who can afford it, but for everyone. It's time for the Republicans to abandon their moral monstrosity and pull this bill.
In his most detailed public comments on the explosive episode, FBI Director James Comey told the Senate Judiciary Committee his decision to disclose the preliminary investigation into newly discovered Clinton emails 11 days before the election was not politically motivated. He says he'd do it again.
Would you speak or would you conceal? And I could be wrong. But we honestly made a decision between those two choices that even in hindsight, and this has been one of the world's most painful experiences, I would make the same decision.
Look for civil libertarian groups to pop a cork today after President Trump signs an executive order making it easier for churches and other religious groups to participate in politics without jeopardizing their tax-exempt status. Trump aims to overcome a provision in the federal tax code prohibiting religious organizations from directly opposing or endorsing political candidates. Two levees have burst in rural parts of eastern Missouri and northeast Arkansas. No major property damage reported. Another levee is soaked but holding up as are tens of thousands of sandbags in other areas near suburban St. Louis. It's part of a larger system stretching down to the Gulf Coast, where a flash flood watch is in effect through this morning from New Orleans across South Mississippi. Two states are closer to legislating tougher restrictions on abortion, with both Iowa and Tennessee seeking governor's signatures that would ban the procedure after 20 weeks. Tennessee's Bill Haslam wants to discuss the bill with the state attorney general, but Iowa Governor Terry Branstad says he will sign the bill tomorrow. There's a Britney Spears musical in the works. Director-choreographer Jerry Mitchell has met with the singer's manager about a Broadway show based on Britney's hits. Now, it's not her life story, but it's going to be kind of like Mamma Mia. The songs will be strung together in a fictional tale.
All right. Thank you, Rasa. It's 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at michiganbusiness.org. Contact them today. Want a surefire way to annoy your colleagues and bosses at the office? Keep chirping about politics. Could even lead to your firing. Katie Hill, editor at the financial website moneyish.com, says people still can't shut up about politics, even at work, and it's exhausting. Katie, how problematic is this?
31% have seen people fight over politics in the office, and 15% admit that they've done that themselves. So it's a real problem what people are doing, whichever side of the fence you're on, and both sides of the fence are doing this. What's happening here, the same study showed about 40% of workers say they've had some kind of negative outcome because of all the politics that's being thrown around the office right now. 26% saying they feel stressed, a bunch of people saying they have reduced productivity, they have negative views of coworkers. So there's a big fallout from people still talking about politics in the office, but it's happening so much more than half of people say they're doing it.
Boy, aren't you just asking for trouble?
Yeah, it shocked me. Like, more than half of people, don't you know just not to say anything? But apparently people don't know not to say anything, or they can't help themselves, or they think people might agree with them, and then they don't. But, I talked to a bunch of experts about this, and basically the consensus was it's a landmine, and you really shouldn't be doing that.
Man, I mean, doesn't the rule of Thanksgiving dinner apply? Is it three things, no religion, politics, or something else?
Yeah, and, in the office it's almost even worse, because you could be, hired, fired, how you're evaluated doing your job. I mean, every single little thing that you're doing, including kind of what you talk about at the water cooler, is being evaluated by people, that do the hiring, that do the firing. And things get around. You got to be really careful in the office, and yet people just aren't doing it.
Boy, 31%, you said, have witnessed a fight. Not fisticuffs, I would imagine, but also including just verbal fights.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully no one's witnessed a fist fight, although I do not put it past people to have a fist fight over such topics. But, yeah, I mean, I think they've witnessed people arguing about that. It's just not a good policy. And then so I asked these people, I was asking all these experts when I talked to them, hey, what do you do when someone brings this up? Because it's happened to all of us, right? And you don't really know what to say. One said you just have to find an excuse like, oh, hey, I forgot to have a meeting, and just get out of there.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at moneyish.com. She's written a piece entitled, "Your Coworkers Think You're Really Annoying When You Do This and at Work," and that is talking about politics. You know what the fascinating thing is? Nobody in the history of debates has ever witnessed one side convincing the other side that they are right.
Right. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, what, you need to look at why you feel the need to talk about this at work. I mean, leave it to the discussion with your friends or whatever, but you got to take this out of the workplace. Are you really thinking you're going to convince your coworkers? And what good is that going to do if you do? You know, it's one person, it's two people, and it probably does a lot more damage to your working relationships than you might even realize.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at the financial website moneyish.com. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org, because helping business grow is pure Michigan. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is celebrating innovators and job creators in a big way, like up to 40% off business PCs big. Even a free 1 terabyte external hard drive with select purchases big. Call 877-BUY-DELL today to connect with a U.S.-based advisor. They're ready to help with tech solutions tailored to your business, like finding just the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, because your hard work is more than appreciated, it's admired. Call 877-BUY-DELL today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. May the 4th be with you. Some of our top stories and headlines. The House is scheduled to vote on a health insurance bill today. Trump will sign an order to promote religious liberty. Midwest braces for flooding. Apple will put $1 billion toward promoting manufacturing in the U.S. Alanis Morissette's ex-manager going to jail for stealing $7 million from her. She definitely has one hand in her pocket, the other one giving a high five. And a woman grazed by a bullet at the Cardinals game last night, fired from outside the stadium. Well, police in Arlington, Texas say two people are dead, including the gunman, after a shooting at a local restaurant. Police say a man walked into a sports bar last evening, got into an argument with an employee, then fatally shot the worker. An armed customer then confronted the shooter and shot him dead. After incidents in Dallas and Austin this week, it's time for a review of what to do in an emergency situation where one attacker has a weapon and the victims do not. We're joined now by Michelle Byington, program attorney with U.S. Law Shield, a firearms legal defense program which also conducts active shooter seminars. Michelle, what do you tell folks?
The quick and dirty is we try to teach folks the run, hide, fight method, which has been advocated by the Department of Defense, and it's also been advocated by the Houston first responders and police departments down here. And we think that's really the best method that folks need to take if they find themselves in an active shooter seminar. If you can run, run, get out of there, because that means if there are less targets, then there is a less likely chance that you will become a casualty. Unfortunately, if you don't have the opportunity to run, we advocate to hide. Go find a closet, turn the lights off, lock the door, turn your cell phone off, for God's sakes. You don't want it, you know, going off and alerting a bad guy that you're hiding in there. Because out of sight, out of mind, these individuals who are, I mean, frankly, nuts, just want a high body count is what they want. And so they want the fastest, easiest targets they can potentially get their hands on. So if you hide, perhaps you will get out of sight, out of mind. However, if hide does not work, then you are forced to fight. If that individual comes into the closet that you are hiding in, then you've got to find basically weapons of opportunity around you if you aren't carrying any other sort of weapon like a knife or perhaps a handgun. Because at that point, you're fighting for your life. But that's what we advocate to all people, the run, hide, fight method when, you know, God forbid the worst happens.
Does that method apply to most situations? Because I'm thinking of, you know, what happened in Austin. It just seemed random. Like, right, what about these random outdoor soft target areas? Same thing, you know, versus someone, God forbid, a bit in a classroom or a conference room of some kind.
Absolutely. The same sort of logic applies here. If you see a nutcase running around with a knife, yeah, run. If you can't run, hide. If you can't hide, it's time to fight. And especially with knife attacks, those are very, very tricky, because what you want to do is you want to attack, if you're forced to fight, okay, you want to attack the weapon, and that really puts you in grave danger. And what studies have shown is that the swarm attack will work. So if you have five people in a closet with you, there's got to be a leader that rises up and says, okay, guys, if this individual comes in wielding his knife, slashing at all of us, we all five have to swarm and attack at once to bring him to the ground and hopefully disarm him.
We're speaking with Michelle Byington, Program Director with U.S. Law Shield. They're a firearms legal defense program. They also conduct active shooter workshops, and we're talking about how to survive a situation where there might be an active shooter or attacker, for that matter. So flush that out, I guess, a little bit more, too. So you mentioned a knife and the swarm approach. What about with a gun? Same thing?
Same thing. Attack the firearm. If you come into the situation where somebody's got a long gun, so like a rifle or a shotgun, what lots of law enforcement professionals advocate, and I think is the best response, is to attack the gunman and put all of your body weight on that firearm. Of course, get next to him. Don't get in front of the barrel, but then put all of your body weight on the barrel of the gun. He will not be able to hold that gun up. He may get a couple shots off. However, they will be hopefully pointed down towards the ground, and then that will give somebody else the opportunity, perhaps, to take the gunman down, and you'll be able to retrieve the firearm.
Thanks, Michelle. Michelle Byington, program attorney with U.S. Law Shield. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Friday eve. Beyond the headlines now, This Morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's a story that's sure to give you the heebie-jeebies and perhaps make you look under the hood to check for stowaways before starting your car this morning. A New York man whose car abruptly caught fire said he popped open his hood and quickly discovered the cause: rats in his engine. Alex Steinfeld said his Volkswagen had been parked for about a week on his Brooklyn block when he tried to drive it to work on Friday. Steinfeld told local TV that when he first started driving the car, he smelled roadkill. He did manage, though, to make it to Manhattan before there was smoke under the hood, which quickly escalated into a full-scale fire. Firefighters were called in, and after it was put out, Steinfeld made the grisly discovery of a family of dead rats that likely caused the blaze. And while his car might be a total loss, he did gain one thing from the experience: a selfie with pro skateboarder Tony Hawk, who happened to be passing by and was filming the scene with his own phone. That is just the most bizarre story of the year. Like, that's a story he could tell at parties,
right,
you know, for the next 20 years, right? The whole thing together,
yeah.
Tony Hawk included.
Tony Hawk, did he put down his phone and offer some help, or just started filming?
I think he was just filming. You know, firefighters were hard at work. They were doing their job, and he was doing his job,
I guess. These guys are posing for selfies. Wow, I never heard of that. With rats under the hood starting a fire.
Right, so think about this. You had that many rats under the hood of his car. Think about how many rats were probably, you know, might be like on his block, in his building.
Yes,
like,
good point.
You know, if you put it that way,
right,
it's even worse.
So he hadn't used it for a couple of months, is that what he said?
No, for about, looks like about a week, I think it said.
Oh, a week? Just a week?
Yeah. About a week on his Brooklyn block, yep.
And the rats made a home.
Yeah. They do not waste time.
Okay. I guess bit some electronics or bit of fuel line or something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Both?
There's nothing they won't attempt to eat, but the rats, you know this.
Wow. Well, at least they... Met their end.
Yes.
Which is helpful to the rat population.
Right. So there's four less rats of the 20 million.
You sacrificed your $30,000 car to kill a family of rats.
Right. Good job.
Thank you, sir.
And this time yesterday, Gordon, you know, we were telling everybody about the unusual piece of art that someone tried to take aboard a plane with them, made from a hand grenade, among other things that could be used as potential weapons. Now, a day later, the TSA has posted another head scratcher on its official Instagram account, an unusual camera that gives new meaning to the phrase, photo shoot. The camera features a handle grip trigger mechanism that bears a strong resemblance to a slightly disguised handgun. The agency said the unusual accessory was found in a passenger's carry-on bag at LaGuardia International Airport in New York. The passenger was allowed to travel with the object, but it had to be placed in a checked bag due to its resemblance to a firearm. So again, you got people saying like, well, look, it doesn't actually do anything, right?
Yeah.
It's just a camera.
Right.
It just looks like a gun. Why can't he take it on? But again, I sort of harken back to what the TSA said about yesterday's thing, the thing that looked like a hand grenade.
Yeah.
You know, do you want somebody pulling that out of their bag at 30,000 feet, given, you know, given our current state of tension on airplanes?
Yes. If you need to take a photo inside the airplane, just use your cell phone camera until you get off the plane.
And I fully understand why someone, you know, who sort of creates something like this doesn't want to put it in a checked bag.
Yeah.
They don't want it damaged.
Right.
They don't want their luggage to be lost.
Or stolen.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, I understand that as well. Maybe that we can do something like maybe people can call these things ahead to the TSA or something. Like maybe you can call ahead the unusual item you're going to bring, have them maybe pre-approve it, you know, online or send a photo, have it pre-approved with something you can bring with you to the airport.
Yeah, still doesn't solve your situation, though, where you say, what if they were to pull it out and cause wide-scale panic inside the plane?
Right, yeah. Right. I guess unless you make an announcement before the before the plane takes off, that could be a problem.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. The passenger seated in 22F is about to pull out an odd-looking thing that is a camera but appears to be a gun. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Rasa K is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the House is scheduled to vote today on a Republican plan to replace the Affordable Care Act. Oregon Republican Greg Walden says the House Rules Committee approved three major amendments last night.
And I believe we've done that now with some changes to the legislation that we'll be bringing forward when it comes to the issue of making sure people with pre-existing coverage have the care and support that they need.
Democrats and some health care experts disagree. Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy says there are enough votes, though, to pass the bill. FBI Director James Comey has no regrets about the agency's handling of the investigation into former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's private email server just days before the presidential election.
That even in hindsight, and this has been one of the world's most painful experiences, I would make the same decision. I would not conceal that on October 28th from the Congress.
President Trump might go 0 for 2 trying to find an Army secretary. Sources say the nomination of Mark Green is now on shaky ground, thanks mainly to comments from his past surfacing regarding LGBT people, Islam, Hispanics, the Second Amendment, and creationism. Citing public safety concerns, the U.S. Coast Guard halted traffic along a 14.5-mile stretch in the Mississippi, a vital passageway for transporting agricultural products and other goods, because of high water and a swift current. Heavy rains have swollen many rivers to record levels in parts of Missouri, Illinois, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. Forecasters expect another 2 to 4 inches of rain through today in parts of some of the same hard-hit areas. Google says it's on top of a phishing scheme that spread quickly yesterday. It sends an email invitation from someone you may know, takes you to a real Google sign-in screen, then asks you to continue to Google Docs. Don't do it. It could be malicious third-party web app that's simply named Google Docs and collecting victims' email and address books. Google says just delete it. New research suggests when kids who are at risk of mental health problems spend a lot of time on digital technology, they're more at risk of attention and disruptive behavior issues. But the Duke University researchers also saw a positive benefit. When the kids sent more text messages on any given day, they seem less anxious, Gordon, and depressed.
All right. Thank you, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Troy Gallion, a senior graduating from the University of Tennessee next month, doesn't plan to go to work right away. Instead, he's lacing up his hiking boots and plans to trek 2,200 miles of the Appalachian Trail to raise money for cancer research and to honor his father, who was diagnosed with esophageal cancer last October. It's a story from USA Today. Mr. Gallion hikes once or twice a month, but he's never tried a trail near the length of the Appalachian, which starts in Georgia and ends in Maine. Only 20% of hikers complete the trip. And while the Appalachian Mountain Club says the hike takes 5 to 7 months to complete, Mr. Gallion plans to finish in just 100 days. He asked those who want to help to donate directly to the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. He started fundraising early last month, and he's optimistic about the potential for his hike to raise not only money, but also awareness for cancer research. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa K, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.